Thank you. It is now time for our main speaker. Please welcome Telly from Redondo.
Hi, my name's Kelly. I'm an alcoholic. Family? What a great group. This is awesome. Thank you, Sam. You did so good.
Yeah,
very
yeah.
Cool. I want to thank Trevor for inviting me. And I want to welcome, oh, this is loud, huh? I can be loud. But all the chip takers, too. You know, newcomers, 30 days, 60 days, the birthdays. What beautiful birthdays. You know, what a big deal. And it's funny because birthdays are such, chips are such an accomplishment. And I love that you guys do every month. That is so cool. Because I remember new. I couldn't get 30 seconds, 30 minutes. I couldn't get, 30 days. Are you kidding me? Right? But then you get 30 days and it's like, okay. And then all of a sudden you get to that 90 and it's like, now I got to wait how long? I need those pats on the back. Like, you know, that a boy, right? So anyway, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, it doesn't really matter. Sometimes the days are a lot harder than the years. But it's huge to get those chips. You know, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. I hope you stick around. And I always like to tell the people that take chips or birthdays that there's a thing called PMS. But it's called pre-milestone syndrome. And it seems to be that we alcoholics seem to go out around 60, 90, 6 months, 1 year, birthdays, milestones. And it's this weird, same thing as PMS in the other sense. But we get like this weird emotional roller coaster either right before a birthday or right after a birthday. So if you're feeling that, just hang tight, ride the roller coaster, and know that it happens to us too. It happens to all of us. PMS. But it does. And everybody's like, oh my God, Kelly, you're kidding me. Like, and then when they get their chip, they're like, I've been emotional and I don't know why. We know it's coming. So, and I've got to say, shout out to, was it Adam that read one of the chapters wearing his Phillies hat? Yeah. I was born in a small town, I tell everyone, Philadelphia. And I don't know how I became an alcoholic, and I don't know whether I was born an alcoholic, and I don't know whether I developed it, but I'll tell you where it started. You know, I come from a family of alcoholics. I come from a family of kind, cool people that like hung guns in the wall and had little etchings on it. I'm like, oh, Uncle Tony, I want to hide stuff in the wall. It's cool. Yeah, so those are some of the people. And my dad was a very violent alcoholic. And my mom ended up leaving him. We went to a small town up in northeastern Pennsylvania called Schuylkillhaven. I know not many people know what that is, but it is by Reading in Pennsylvania. And it has no lights, and it's, I just realized, only a mile square. And, you know, there was like 300 and some in our whole graduate high school that I went to. So oddly enough, I went from Philadelphia, and my mom left a violent alcoholic to move up to Schuylkillhaven. And loving family, walk grandma to church every morning, and then would go to school and hang out with bad kids and smoke pot or cigarettes. I actually didn't really start any of that kind of behavior until like seventh or eighth grade, so I'm a late bloomer. But I do remember my fifth grade school picture when my mom left my dad because she cut all of our hair off. My dad liked us all to have long hair, and we all had these short haircuts, you know. And, you know, fifth graders aren't that big. They're not that tall, right? And I remember I hadn't yet hit puberty yet, but maybe, you know, the picture, you know, obnoxious. And it was in fifth grade that my dad, being the cool alcoholic that he wanted to be, sent me pot through the mail to this small town. And I remember getting these big manila envelopes with pot in them. And I'm like, you know, a fifth grader, really? I didn't smoke pot then. All I knew is that if I took him to the big kids down at the playground, he'd like me. So I learned early on how to get you to like me or how to get away with stuff. You know, by the time seventh and eighth grade rolled around, the nuns had us, you know, doing whatever we needed to do. And we were smuggling, you know, that drink that comes from everyone's home and is everybody's mix of all kinds of alcohol. Yeah. And we were getting in trouble. And I remember once, one of the girls that got caught drinking, I was one of them. But she got led down by her ear by one of the nuns down the hallway. She was expelled. The other girl was expelled. Angela was expelled. And I had to clean the rectory because my grandma broke ground for the church. So I knew how to get away with stuff, but that didn't make me an alcoholic. All kids are pretty bright when it comes to getting away with what they want to get away with. You know? Did that feeling of loneliness or that feeling of like, I'm not enough start then? Every kid's got that. So I really don't know when it developed. I can tell you in high school, I was an overachiever. I mean, it's kind of not that difficult when you got a class of 80. But, you know, I went to 7 proms. I was homecoming queen, student council president, captain of the swim team. I even have a varsity letter from the men's wrestling team. Spend more time in the broom closet, but hey. Anyway, 7 proms, overachiever. I was the cheerleader that was the head of the top of the pyramid and the swim team coach and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, I still felt like a loser. Still felt like I just can't. I'm not like you guys. I never made the honor roll. So, you know, I thought, well, when I moved and left and came back out here to California and, one of my uncles, I had some crazy uncles. There was Uncle Tony, you know, and then there was my other uncle, Uncle Goody. And he was shot in the head, wrapped in chains and thrown in the Susquehanna River. But I think he got on the bad side of the good guys, bad side of the bad guys, who knows, but he was a big cocaine dealer. So, you know, typical family, just, you know, nothing out of the ordinary. But when I moved out here to California and, we don't know how, we don't know why, but on Christmas Day, suspiciously, my mom was taken from us. And I flew back home. And I remember that flight back home because I have 3 little sisters. That flight back home, you know that song, L on your forehead? I just knew, like, I kind of emotionally had this L on my forehead. I knew that I was like that loser. They were all going to find out. I wasn't all that in a bag of chips. I wasn't the one that was, you know, the honor roll student. You know what I mean? But so I went back home to the small town and had custody of my little sisters and drank. And I'm kind of grateful. But this athlete, this, you know, tiny little athlete from high school just drank. I went to clubs and I went everywhere. And I was like, I even went to a gun club and shot pool with Wolfman Jack. No, that's not the guy that owns the restaurant for you young kids. But, that's how I mourned my mom's death. I cried and I cried and I went and shot pool and I drank and, oh, you look like your mom and, oh, your mom was beautiful. And, did I take, custody of my little sisters and take care of them? No, I ran through my family's homes and lives like it was Motel 6. And then, don't you know what I've just been through? Not that they had lost a sister, a daughter, a mom themselves, but it was all about me. And my drinking took off, And when your family comes up and has to be like, that conversation where you gotta go. I'm stealing from grandma and filling her Windsor bottle back up with water. I thought I invented that brilliant idea, but it seems as though we've all done stuff like that. And I got jobs with friends in their bars and, And people that you know are like, okay, you just threw up behind the bar and you can't stop drinking anything and you fall flat, you know, we'll make you a waitress. We'll do, you know, whatever. And then I'm sleeping in the car that I probably should have sold and, you know, all this kind of stuff until my family's like, you got to go. You got to go. Frothy emotional appeal seldom suffices. I didn't understand what that meant, but that froth, like on top of a cappuccino, you know, it's like your drinking is a little out of control. Like, whatever. Don't you understand? My mom's done. It doesn't matter what you tell an alcoholic, and it certainly didn't matter what you told me. It was like froth on the top of that cappuccino. Just blow it off. It's that somebody coming and telling experience, feeling and talking like they know how I feel, that all of a sudden something makes sense. The message has to have depth and weight. And I'm hoping that maybe somewhere, somehow, that something I say tonight might have depth and weight, and that you might feel the hope of Alcoholics Anonymous. If not, it's Trevor's fault. So I drank a lot. I drank a gallon of whiskey a day until my heart stopped. This little athlete that was, homecoming queen. You know, okay, so maybe it's a problem. But it's not going to kill me. Okay, so my heart stopped. That's not going to kill me. I was 240 pounds. I was losing hair on the back of my head. I had that gray skin and yellow eyes, you know, that vision for you that we talk about. I remember I was working, then I moved out here to California, and a friend of mine, because of course somebody's going to give me a job, and I had to live off another friend that was going to pay the bills because I had to drink. And my friend was like, I'm working at her place, her establishment as a receptionist. And it was a photo studio. And all of a sudden, this lady walks in and she goes, you know, my grandfather died of alcoholism. Whatever. As I take a sip of my teacup that has the tea bag hanging out, but it was really whiskey because nobody knows, you know, in the front desk of her, you know, what's her problem? And she's like, he turned yellow before he died. I'm like, whatever. Go away. You know. Frothy emotional appeal. You know, had that woman walked up and went, you know what? Goodness, I'll come pick up my things later. I've got to get to a meeting. I stopped drinking a couple months ago. I used to drink a lot. Man, I would have heard what she said. Hold on. You stop? You know? We don't really react to that frothy emotional appeal. It's that depth and weight. It's that message. And I'll tell you right now, I might skip around. You can carry that message with 30 days, with 7 days, with 1 year, five. It doesn't matter the amount of time. We're all clowns on the same bus. It's just some of us got on a bus stop beforehand.
Right.
Okay?
That's right.
And it doesn't matter when the newcomer's sitting there and the newcomer doesn't know when they sit next to you and you go, no, we're going to do this. Do you want to get some coffee? This is here. There's a meeting list. This is our big, the newcomer doesn't go, hold on a second. How much time do you have? When you tell them your name and you say, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous, they don't ask. You can start helping another no matter how much time you have. So. Yeah, you can start 10, 11, 12 from the very get-go, out of self, out of self, out of self. So anyway, I'm drinking a lot, and you know, it's kind of like when you wake up in the morning and you have like that bottle, you know, you got this much left in the bottle. It's gonna be a good day. When you know that there's at least something left in the bottle when you wake up. But for me, I knew that I was, at this time I'd have to crawl into the bathroom because I couldn't really stand, and I had to suck on a washcloth because I knew that if I drank that whiskey before I did that, before I threw up the bile and the pain and everything that was inside, that I wouldn't be able to keep down that whiskey. And I wouldn't be able to steady myself enough to maybe get out the door so that I might be able to steal some money from my roommate, that I might be able to go get some more and do it all again. Because I'm young. It's not going to kill me. Okay, so it might be a problem, but it's not going to kill me. I get that. And I love that you, what you read about they stopped in time, because we can. We really can. So I got sober because a man named Singin' Sam took me down to a place called Redgate. He used to pound on the tables. Men with men, women with women. And I go, my God, then why do you keep picking me up? And he was the kind of, he got sober in 1942 or something. Met Bill, and I mean, just an old merchant seaman. It doesn't matter whether you came from Park Bench or Park Place, it's the same damn disease. And I only remember some of his things that he'd say in those years because I was drunk when he picked me up, and then he'd take me all these places. He'd take me to MWA, he'd take me to Redgate, he'd take me all over to LA and Long Beach and, you know, Seal Beach, everywhere Sam would go. But he brought me down to a place called Redgate, and he told me to get a hold of somebody that had what I wanted, you know? And I did, and he had 30 days more than me. And he sang me a song. So when I left, we got married, he stole my car, and then had a kid. Because I can fix him. Long story short, I stayed sober. I had my son. I was 2 years sober when I had my son in 93. And, you know, I was very proud of the fact that I had to leave him because everything was fine. And he kept selling everything that wasn't, you know, nailed down. So I remember I showed up at my dad's place with a baby in one arm and at like midnight and a VCR in the other. And I just said, I just thought maybe we watch a movie. No, I brought this because you might not have one, or he might sell it if I leave it. And I thought, how cool that I've got all this time sober, you know, and I did the steps and I had the sponsors and everything like that. And, oh goodness, there was some, you know, I did step three, and I remember my first time I did step three, somebody's like, we got on our knees, and then I went to a meeting and somebody's like, oh. And I remember hearing maybe you share about doing your step three and how emotional it was. So of course I went to a meeting and said, I did my step three and how emotional it was. And it's my will or God's will. And I just gave it away and didn't really understand what I was doing, but I did the steps. And that day came kind of like Bill talks about, which is tomorrow, by the way. The insidious insanity of that first drink on Armistice Day, which is tomorrow. I went back to drinking a gallon of whiskey a day very quickly after 7 years of sobriety. My sobriety date now is May 5th, 1998. And that gallon of whiskey a day became very quickly me drinking in meetings and swearing to you, I want to stop. I don't want to do this. I don't want to stand up as a newcomer anymore. I don't want to do this anymore. And I don't care whether you drank like I drank as much as I drank, or drank what I drank, whether it came in pill powder or liquid. But we all understand when Bill explains in his story, he says, the remorse, the horror, the hopelessness, and the courage to battle isn't there. My brain raced uncontrollably, and there was a sense of impending calamity. The terror, the madness, the loneliness, and the despair, we get that. And when I'm sitting there in a meeting and I'm like, yeah, but I messed up AA, you always get that person that walks up to you and goes, why did you do this? All right, what's the quick AA response? What's the right AA answer? I didn't go to meetings, didn't have a sponsor, didn't do the steps. Oh, yeah, that's it. That's it. And I'm like, well, at least I got that one right. But I did go to meetings. I did have a sponsor and I had done the steps. So what happened? You know, I'm speaking at meetings. I'm going to meetings. I'm socializing at meetings. I'm going to the dances. I'm not living in 10, 11, and 12. And when somebody would ask me to sponsor them, I'm like, sure, because that's a badge on my thing. And I'm like, I'm a sponsor, right? Call me every day or you're fired. That's a rule. And you can't sleep with anybody in the first year. That's another rule. What's another one? Yeah, you got to do the third step. Give it away. Give it to God. It's God's will, my will, that thing. Well, and then, you know, you get somebody that wants you to sponsor them and actually explain that to them. And they're like, well, it's just my will or God's will. It's give it away or you turn it over and, you know. And then somebody said, well, when, you know, do your four step, just write your life story. And then she was going to tell me what was wrong with it. So then when somebody asked me to open the book with them, I'm like, well, you know. So this time around, what I did differently was that I got a sponsor that walked me through that big book. And if you don't have a sponsor, if you don't know how to get a sponsor, I always tell people the first thing you want to ask for is if they've done the steps. Funny how that works. There's a lot of people sponsoring that have not done that. And if you want to go through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, ask them if they've done the steps. I have a big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's explained in working with others on your second visit. And they want to go through the 12 steps of the program of recovery outlined in this book. Then you can tell them, I've had the experience and I'm available if you wish to make a decision, your third step or your fifth step. Because those are two that you actually need somebody. But don't insist upon it. They wish to consult someone else. And it's kind of neat because I didn't know the rules were in there. Did you know our program outlined in the book actually has the rules in there? And some of the rules are not in there. You know, it does not tell me that I can tell somebody in a meeting that they can't take any pills prescribed by anybody if they want to be sober. Because then you got people that go home and stop taking certain pills that they probably should that were prescribed by a doctor. Just because I went through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous does not put an MD at the end of my name. What it does is it makes me available to you if you want to walk through that big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's it. That's all. We're not a religious group. I was speaking at a meeting up in the valley once, and I think this is kind of important, but line was there to thank me, and this girl was being all cautious, and she's like, is there any way that I could, you know, is there other places like this that I can come to? And I'm like, why can't you come back here? Well, no, it was really nice. Just the people I was sitting with said that if I want to keep coming back here, and if I want to be, you know, able to come in here, that I have to find Jesus. And I'm Jewish. This young lady had like what, a week or two, and the people that were trying to share with their experience with their higher power with this young lady were not doing anything wrong except for the fact that they forgot that we don't have to have the same concept of a higher power in order to help someone. You know what I mean? And I think that's important because this young lady didn't know that maybe she couldn't come back there. You know, there's a lot we can do to help others in Alcoholics Anonymous. Sometimes it's just remembering their name. There was a woman called Betty Garcia. And Betty Garcia would swing her long gray hippie hair. And so trust me, if you're judging me out there, I totally get it. But I remember sitting in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and going, oh my God, you look at the clock. And it's one of those days that I didn't want to be there, but I didn't want to be home. And I didn't want to drive home because I knew that I might drink. And I didn't want to drink because I didn't want to stand up again. I just didn't want to be in my own skin and I didn't want to be there. And oh my God, is she still talking? She's too old to have that long gray hair. And she may have pointed at the steps and she may have pointed and said something really profound, but my God, she wouldn't shut up. And I'm, you know, just sitting there. But afterwards, Betty Garcia came up and said, hi, Kelly, I'm glad you're back. All of a sudden, I love Betty Garcia. She knew my name and I was coming back. What a difference just saying hello to somebody can make. Out of self, out of self, out of self. So my new sponsor, she took me through the book and I realized that, you know, A, B, and C is steps 1 and 2 and they're found in the first four chapters of the book. okay? All the way up to the A, B, and C's. And it doesn't mean that I have to find it in two, and it doesn't mean that I have to find it in one or in Bill's story, but I can find it throughout there. I can look through that whole thing and go, oh, that's me. The Me Too movement, we were first. I did that. And I loved reading Bill's story, and every time it was like, you know, that part where he's like, and this time I meant business. He did. He really did. Woke up the next morning drunk. Oh, Bill, I could read that every single time, and I still think he's going to get it that time in that paragraph. But it's like, where I get to the part where it's like we fail to enrich our spiritual life, where it's like we have no recourse or no defense against the first rate. My gosh, that's sad and scary. I could just walk out of here and be struck drunk. I have no defense. Are you kidding me? But if we look into that story, sometimes it's like, well, no, he woke up. He had a resentment against his boss. Well, that's it. I can never get in an argument with my boss. Ever. I can never have a resentment ever because I might just go put a shot of whiskey in my mouth, right? No, right before that, he says, but he failed to enrich his spiritual life. Oh, so what is this you guys are talking about? I had somebody tell me once that I can't go on to step three unless I get step two. And if I know who God is, if I don't have a God, that I can't go any further. My goodness, no. Step two is just me realizing that I lack that power. And I'll tell you, there's no more power in me right here, right now, than there is in any one of you to be able to stop another alcoholic or to stop me if that thought crosses my mind. Except the power of Alcoholics Anonymous. Sometimes that's enough. If I don't know who God is or what there is or what step two is about, I can walk into a room and know that I'm sitting on my hands and I'm going, I don't want to. I swear, this is my last time taking a chance. How did you guys, I don't know how many, but there's 40, 50 here. How'd you guys go home and not drink until today? How did you do it? Because that's a power a whole lot bigger than me at the moment that I'm sitting there going, please don't let me do this again. And step three, I finally figured out, she had to ask me, you know, did you read the page before it? I'm like, what, huh? What? No, I just read the prayer. She's like, well, we're going to read the whole book. I'm grateful, but it was like, we're going to read the whole book. Okay. So step three doesn't really, you don't even have to have God know who God is or like name him, shook his hand and anything like that. But if you look at it, you can do any of these steps just as if you haven't yet found your higher power. I do believe that our ice cube slowly melts as we do the steps. That ice cube slowly melts. And sometimes it takes me getting to the later on steps, my character defects and making amends and changing the way that I'm doing things for me to realize that there's a power greater than me. Sometimes it takes me waiting for that ice cube to melt. So in the beginning, I just have to know that I lack that power. So how do I do step three? Well, I wake up and I go, you know, first I got to realize what me is, the page before, my fears, my insecurities, my indignant behavior. Indignant, that's like the greatest alcoholic word. Oh my God. To be mad or upset at what I feel is unfair to me. The landlord wants his rent. And like, he doesn't understand. Like, it's so unfair. Yeah. Or the man that lolls in the Florida sunshine. I could not get that one. You know, the man that lolls in the Florida sunshine. I'm like, well, that's not me. That doesn't happen. I don't, you know, that sits in the Florida sunshine and lulls about the sad state. You know, if I ran this, that's not me. But I'll sit there and, you know, rehab and go, you know, if I ran this place, I wouldn't have that stupid rule about not having our phones. Right? My fear, my insecurity, my indignant behavior, that is self, me. What if I fail? What if I can't? What if I won't? What if you don't like me? You know, and step three is what do you got for me? It's the keystone that holds all the other steps together. Why? When in doubt, go back to the third because it makes sense with all the other steps. Why do I want to do that resentment? Why do I want to do that amends? Go back to the third. And I have to open my arms up and go, you know, build with me, do with me as you wish. So what do you got for me today, Sunday? Go speak at the meeting. No, they won't like me. I won't have anything right to say. I'm going to mess up. You know what I mean? Relieve the bondage of self so that I can walk through whatever's just put in front of me and help another tomorrow. So victory over that means that I can bear witness to somebody else. That's it. How does it fit in every other thing that we do? What do you got for me today? Put in front of me what you want so I can walk through it and help somebody else tomorrow. Boom. All right, now I'm getting this. And then she goes, now you got to do a four-step. Well, those resentments and all that other stuff. Yeah. But resentments really do have the power to kill. And I didn't realize it. But I thought, oh, the four-step. Everybody goes out at the four-step. Well, it's really kind of easy. If I'm standing over there at the coffee bar and you ask me why I don't like Susie, I'm going to be like, my God. Well, you know, she did this and this. Oh, and then she did this too. Well, I'm already halfway through my columns with Susie. All I got to figure out is how it affected me and what things and how I reacted to it, right? But those resentments can cause my jaw to get real tight. And if anybody ever gives you that, oh, I had somebody once go, well, you know what? My sponsor won't let me go on, I feel like drinking. And I'm like, well, during your four-step. And she's crying. And I'm like, well, what's going on? Well, she told me to write down everybody in my first column and then call her next week. And I'm like, oh, God. Yeah, I'm going to write down everybody that's ever made me feel like drinking, made me feel like giving up, angry, you know what I mean? And then call you next week. Sure. And then what did you call her? And she's like, yeah, she just told me to pray about it. That didn't work. And I'm like, well, you got to understand the prayer. You got to take it all the way through. You got to write a name down, write the whole column, and then say the prayer before you go on to anything else. Because blocked from the sunlight of the spirit is what it talks about. If I'm caught up in that resentment, that feeling of I'm just out of here. Forget this. This is wrong. People are wrong. That girl at the rehab that wouldn't wash the spoon, she's just wrong. I'm out of here, right? All of a sudden, I'm blocked from the sunlight of spirit. The insanity of my thinking returns, and I'm like, screw it. I'm out of here. So what's the prayer? It's the only prayer that is in the big book for me. Is the fact of the matter, I realized Susie... So now Susie, who also wanted to sleep with my boyfriend and some other things, you know what I mean? Probably stole from me. Fancied or real, it doesn't mean that I have to prove that she wanted to sleep with my boyfriend for it to affect me, right? So now that it's her fault, how do I get over this and not drink? Well, I have to realize that perhaps Susie is, like myself, spiritually sick. So now if I have the flu and you have the flu, but I lost my voice. You don't look like you have the flu at all. But you might have an upset stomach. Does it mean one of us has the flu and the other one doesn't? No, it means our symptoms are different. And it's the same way with our resentment list. God save me from being angry so that I can walk through this, maybe get to know a little bit more about me so that I can help another. Well, back to that, helping another thing. Crazy how that works. And I love that because some people were telling me, pray for that one. They're a sick one. Well, that puts me up on a pedestal looking down at another, doesn't it? Like, oh, pray for that one. They're a sick one. No, that's not what that prayer is about. That prayer is about save me from being angry. How can I look at this person as a sick person? My dad was one of the hardest people for me to get that prayer through or to pray for because he was just mean sometimes, right? And I realized acceptance doesn't mean approval when it comes to those steps. Acceptance doesn't mean approval. It just means that I get to allow them to be. I don't have to make any of them my BFF or make them my friends or go, you know what I mean? But I just have to allow them to be so I can get through these steps so that I can be a better me and maybe learn a few facts about me to carry a message to you. Then we get to the sex and fear because they go so well together. Oh my gosh, I spoke at a meeting once and my sponsor was on stage with me. And I said, yeah, my sponsor's on my sex inventory. And she's like, she kind of was, but you call up your sponsor and it was like, she had just gotten a new sponsee. You know what that means. because I'm her favorite. So it's the only place in the book that the word, it's the first place where jealousy is mentioned. Do I arouse jealousy, suspicion, or fear? And all of a sudden I heard the word jealousy and I realized I'm jealous. And I'm like, so I call her. I'm like, so I have this resentment. Where do I put it? She goes, put it wherever you're at, just on the page. And I'm like, okay. So she's on my sexual inventory. Susie, who would not wash the spoon, is on there too. My arch nemesis from AA. Because of course she walks into the meeting with, oh, what's his name? And he kind of had eyes for me for a while, but all of a sudden now he walks in with Susie and I'm like, hi, are you? Oh, you two are together now? I didn't know that. That's sweet. Okay, bye. Did I arouse jealousy, suspicion, or fear in Susie? Well, I certainly hope so. That was my intention. I mean, I only came in with so many tools. Now, where does that go? Do I have to have had sex with Susie for it to be on my sexual inventory? No, it's my inventory, no one else's. And it has to do with me getting this free. How free do you want to be? So I wrote it down. And that led me to learn a few facts about how I react or how I act when these things come up. And I started putting them together on this little list that comes up later. So, do you ever have somebody go, so we burned my fifth step. We did my fifth step and then we burned it. And then like we start reading again and it says, go back to the list. What? You got to do 6, 7, 8, and 9. You wrote all these things down when you did your four step and I burned it. Oh. Read ahead. So started putting these things out there. You know what I mean? And I learned that in 6 and 7 that it's there's good and bad that I learned from this inventory. It's not all just I'm this worthless human being. That I get a chance to like be both good and bad. But help me change the things that aren't going to be of service to you and my fellows. How do I make those amends that I don't want to make? How do I tell my sisters that I wasn't there for them, that I kind of flaked on them when mom died? How do I do that? How do I make amends to my son who I drove in blackouts when I relapsed? When I hit him in the car. 30 years later, he remembers that one day, and that's okay. I make these living amends with the help of you, showing me how. Some things come back, some things don't, you know? But I'll tell you, God, lead me where you need me. Because it doesn't matter whether I'm going to chase this person or that person or try to get the message to my sister or anybody else in the world. It's who do you have in store for me? What are you putting right in front of me? Where do you want me? How can I be of help to someone? Out of self, out of self, out of self. When in doubt, go back to that third step. Because I'll tell you that one of the most honest things that I ever said was when somebody said, well, if you had some time before, what do you think you're going to learn from this program? I remember saying, I just want to know where the pain comes from. Because it still hurts. And when I walk through those steps hand in hand with you, I can't do it at home by myself. I have to like hold your hand and learn how you did it and hear how you did it and realize that I'm not alone in this, that all of a sudden the pain starts to melt, that ice cube starts to melt. Things get a little brighter. Things get a little better. I love, you know, the 10th step is just everything that I just did, all combined in a quick reference, you know. But I love the 10 and 11. Patio used to say, if she goes to bed at night and says, God, let everyone tomorrow treat me the way I treated them today, you will quickly realize the things that you want to change tomorrow. How do I do that? How do I just wake up today and go, let me be useful, let me be kind? Because I'll wake up in some fear. It doesn't mean that these things don't come up. It doesn't mean that, you know, with 26 years of sobriety, that I don't get into fear that my family members are going to not be okay, or that, you know, financial insecurity or whatever this may hold. And the last thing that I want to do is go find out how you're doing. But I do, because that's what you taught me how to do. Out of self, out of self, out of self. Something changes when I change the way I look at things. When I change the way I look at things, the things I look at change. And the only way sometimes I can do that is through your eyes. And I may not even know it. Sometimes it might be that I'm like going through financial insecurity. You know, I don't want to drive. I'm just mad. And all of a sudden I get a phone call from a sponsee. And I'm like, ah, not that one. Hi, I don't know how I'm going to pay for this. So, okay, so what did we just read? Let's go over the fear prayer. Oh my gosh. Okay, so we're going to read the fear prayer of God, save me. Financial insecurity, okay, da, da, da. Relieve me of the bondage of this fear and replace it with what you would have me be. Let's imagine it. And I realized that God just put this phone call in my path when I'm terrified and gripped with fear about finances. And I didn't even realize it until I hung up and went, oh, okay. We don't chase the ones we think we're going to give a message to. We just open our arms and let the message and be the messenger when we need to be. And I'll tell you, Singing Sam used to say one thing, another thing. A bell is not a bell unless you ring it. And a song is not a song unless you sing it. Love isn't meant in the heart to stay, because love isn't love until you give it away. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you so much for letting me come out and share with you. I hope you heard something that brings you some hope.